fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity, Katar. Now, do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
That's not fair. That's not fair. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings obliteration. Face my fear, no permit to pass over me, Mr. Henry.
Happy heresies, and welcome to the Desert of the Real. You can guess what my intro will be about by the clips of Will Smith in After Earth and luscious Rebecca Ferguson in Dune. Fear is the mind killer, the little death that brings total obliteration. Yet fear also impedes us from understanding death, the big death, which is only eternity disguised as time. Or you could say death is just the film credits of your life movie that was never more than one nice story in a multiverse full of other stories. All streaming in and out of the mind of God.
Down through the centuries, the notion that life is wrapped in a dream has been a pervasive theme of philosophers and poets. So doesn't it make sense that death too would be wrapped in dream?
I've said this before, and that is, fear is just our wanting to control life. The one thing that can't be controlled to any significant extent. We want to control situations, relationships, and outcomes under the terms of our ego, instead of allowing instinct and higher thoughts to take the reins of destiny. Yes, fear is wanting to control. Wanting to control life because we, at our deepest level, don't want to let go of life and accept we're going to die. Or accept that we're already dead on some curl of the Ouroboros. As Freud wrote, the goal of all life is death. Remember, death isn't even death, just eternity disguised as time. Which is supported by Goethe when he said, death is a commingling of eternity with time. In the death of a good man, eternity is seen looking through time.
Life is always on the edge of death, always. And one should lack fear and have the courage of life. That's the principal initiation of all of the heroic stories.
Fear is the mind killer. Fear has ruled our culture with an iron fist since the departure of the Starman in 2016. And it's not getting better. The Archons and their Karens and Catamites in the establishment want even more control. In their rising fear, meat sacks want to control everything until everyone is the same and safe in their pods eating bugs.
Ask yourself, what's more terrifying? Fear or the frightened?
See, it's no good, Monty. We've all got to be alike. The only way to be happy is for everyone to be made equal.
Let's end fear here at Aeon Byte. And like the Stoics said, let's, quote, memento mori, or remember death. Because in the recognition of our mortality is where we find the portals to the infinite. My name is Miguel Connor, your Pompidus of Gnosis, always taking you to the farthest shores of Ursula Le Guin, as we die and resurrect in this multiverse of stories and their temporal credit scenes. I am a Gen X in a Gen X wasteland.
You framed an Asia poster? How hard did the people at the frame store laugh when you brought this in?
They did not laugh at me.
No, Ayurye? Because you like Asia.
It is a pleasure to host Dr. Cressida Stone in this Eternal Now, who will be discussing her fantastic book, Secrets of Santa Muerte, a guide to the prayers, spells, rituals, and hexes. Beyond a deep understanding of this deity's impact and influence on society today, Cressida will reveal her gifts to defeat the mind killer that is fear and allow us into the portals to the infinite.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
Ah, what an enigmatic goddess, Santa Muerte. She is a syncretic fusion of the Aztec goddess of death, Xochicoaxli, and the grim reaper figure that arose after the Black Death, the one the Spaniards portrayed as a female and called her La Parca. Although the church suppressed this hybrid goddess in Mexican colonial times, Santa Muerte arose again in 1940 after 150 years of silence. Like Ashira / Anat, who arose in Greco-Roman times as Sophia, you can't keep these dynamic anima forces down. Wisdom and eternity never leave the hearts of those seeking freedom, individuality, and higher realities.
You no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being. Me, protect you.
We did an hour due to scheduling archons, but as a bonus for all subs, I'll include a past interview with Tracy Rollins, based on her also excellent book, Santa Muerte, The History, Rituals, and Magic of Our Lady of the Holy Death. This bonus will focus more on the historical Santa Muerte. With Cressida, I wanted to concentrate more on the saints' rituals, theology, and mystical rewards that are so important in this society, so infected by the mind killer that is fear. Consider this another mini course. Regardless of how you feel about Santa Muerte, also consider this your clarion call to embrace life, wisdom, and eternity.
My name, my personality, my choices all came after me. I was before them, and I will be after, and everything else is pictures picked up along the way. Fleeting little dreamlets printed on the tissue of my dying brain.
In Orwell's 1984, the party eventually sends dissidents to Room 101. What is Room 101? It's a place where a political prisoner faces their greatest fear. Every individual's psyche breaks in Room 101, making them permanently docile and lovingly loyal to Big Brother's dark dream of safety and group thought.
Don't worry, Number 6. You'll be cured. I'll see to it. No more nightmares. If you have so much as a bad dream, you will come, whimpering, to tell it to me. Whimpering.
Fear indeed is the mind killer. The protagonist of the story, Winston, is no exception. Neither will you be if you're not careful, considering how social media, AI, and internet algorithms have already deducted your deepest fear.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
So what is your greatest fear? Imagine if you didn't have it. What could you accomplish? As Paul Levy explains, that mind parasite Wetiko needs the pollution in your soul to fashion a prison for your consciousness and fatten you up for louche feeding. If you have nothing dark to project to Wetiko, it has no power. Simple as that.
Train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose.
In Gnostic texts, the Archons cannot create, but only poorly imitate the Eternal Realm. And the Eternal Realm is within us, the Divine Spark. So they imitate false realities outward to keep us hoodwinked. Some of these realities are fake paradises, but some are twisted images of the good that don't allow us to thrive. If we see through these images, Wetiko is powerless.
I will know every thought in your head in just a few moments. All your memories, your senses, your fear, your suffering.
Again, what is your biggest fear? Meditate on that and know that it's a construct with many levels and rooms that hold many aspects of you, your ancestors, and the collective consciousness. This construction also stores the treasure for you to exercise Wetiko and the Archons. Room 101 holds your salvation as it holds your damnation. And don't forget that psychopomps like Hermes, Sophia, and Santa Muerte can be wonderful companions.
You, as you know yourself, are not the final term of your being. And you must die to that one way or another. Life is always on the edge of death, always.
Fear is the mind killer. Death is just eternity disguised as time. Control what is within you like a stoic Super Saiyan, and the mind parasites can't torture you. Death is pregnant with life, and Santa Muerte only takes orders from God in her dispensation. As the Gospel of Philip states, light and darkness, life and death, right and left, are brothers of one another. They are inseparable. Because of this, neither are the good good, nor evil evil, nor is life life, nor death death. For this reason, each one will dissolve into its earliest origin. But those who are exalted above the world are indissoluble, eternal.
If we have souls, they are made of the love we share, undimmed by time, unbound by death.
And as author Nagui Mafos said, fear does not prevent death, it prevents life. And we can't forget the Sophia Philip K. Dick when he wrote, "It amazes me, the sobering power of human death. It outweighs all words, all arguments. It is the ultimate force. It coerces your attention and your time. And it leaves you changed." Just like Santa Muerte, I would say. Let us to our interview with Cressida. But first, more Sophia. This time from Neil Gaiman's Sandman on Death.
I find myself wondering about humanity. Their attitude to my sister's gift is so strange. Why do they fear the sunless lands? It is as natural to die as it is to be born. But they fear her. They dread her. Feebly they attempt to placate her. They do not love her. Many thousands of years ago, I heard a song in a dream, a mortal song, that celebrated her gift, and still remember it. Death is before me today, like the recovery of a sick man, like going forth into a garden after sickness, Death is before me today, like the odor of myrrh, like sitting under a sail in a good wind. Death is before me today, like the course of a stream, like the return of a man from the war galley to his house. Death is before me today, like the home that a man longs to see after years spent as a captive. That poet understood her gifts. I walk by her side, and the darkness lifts from my soul. I walk with her, and I hear the gentle beating of mighty wings.
This is the Aeon Bide interview, and with us we have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Cressida Stone to discuss her book, Secrets of Santa Muerte, a guide to the prayers, spells, rituals, and hexes. Cressida, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure's all ours. And with us, too, we've got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Looking forward to this interview. Reminds me of my favorite animation show, Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty. Yeah. Something like that. So awesome. I really enjoyed your book. Again, as I was talking, I am tempted to do my own altar, except like I said, I was taken by Artemis, and she's also a very jealous goddess. She likes all the attention. So I have to navigate that. But when I got into Artemis, it was a sort of a thing of synchronicities, small visions, calls that came. But for you, with Santa Muerte, I was almost jealous because it's almost like she came and said, we're working together. Can you tell the audience about that amazing story?
Well, I just basically had no choice. And to be quite honest, I'm an academic by training. And my identity is slightly different from what I've said on the book, because I was trying to keep my identity actually under wraps for the longest of time, because it's never been about me. It's always been about Santa Muerte. Mm-hmm. And so I always wanted to stay in the shadows and not really put a voice or a face even to the name, or have people know who what my true identity is. But through an unfortunate set of events, I was doxxed. So now I've had to, my skeletons are not hidden in the closet anymore, so to speak. So I set out to Mexico. I'm actually an anthropologist by training. I did my degree at Oxford University in England. And I went out just to study this tradition. But as you know, I had this incredible experience with a car accident. And I basically felt that I had no choice but to become a devotee. I mean, I was just thrown into her arms. And it wasn't as if I suddenly decided, oh, I'm going to become a devotee of Santa Muerte. Events were so intense that I just found myself becoming a devotee. And I felt that this was presaged as well, because I find that a lot of devotees that I've met, whether in Mexico or further afield, have had near-death experiences, whether that's, actual physical, near physical death experiences, or whether it's what I would call, and what I've written about in my more academic publications, death of the self. That is, something calamitous or very intense happens to you that is so tough that you basically have to be reborn from the ashes. You don't even know who you are. You sort of die, and some people rise up like a phoenix from the ashes. But some people, to use the parallel of Jesus, when he died, on the cross, people kind of forget that resurrection was a very painful thing, whether you believe in the story or not, the mythology, if you look at that, he's bleeding there on the cross for days in agony. He's got all these awful nails in his hands and body. That can be a very painful process. So I find that a lot of people come to Santa Muerte through, as myself, difficult processes. I also had, a very hard time with my health. I was young at the time, and I didn't understand, why I was going through all these things. I had an operation. I was bleeding out on a table, and I really thought I was going to die at that moment. So I've had these brushes with death, you know, these very painful, intense, difficult experiences. But, you know, she's taught me that we can be reborn from those things. And devotees writing to me have echoed. I could give you so many stories, but I don't want to go on and on about that. And I'm sure you have lots of questions.
No, this is great. I think it's something we need to see, because Santa Muerte, her devotion is becoming, I think, as Vance was looking up beforehand, the fastest growing new religion in the world. And it's not just a personal religion, but it's a cultural religion, right? I mean, Mexico has been so under so much pain and pressure and violence these last 20 years. She seems like it's almost inevitable that a figure would rise from to take care of the people, right?
Well, I feel that in some ways, new religious movement is somewhat of a misnomer, in the sense that I think, you know, if we look at pre-Hispanic Mexico, and even across the world, there have always been death deities. And, you know, pre-Hispanic Mexico is so rich for that. I'm a real geek, and I wish we had camera on right now, because I've got all these books, ethno-archaeological books, like this one, The Art and Iconography of Late Post-Classic Central Mexico. And all these books that I've been looking at, and not just about the Aztec, but about the Mixtec, the Zapotec, the Maya, so many different groups, the Otomi, had different death deities that they worship. So in a way, you could call this new, but it's just, for me, it's a reworking of something very ancient, atavistic, primordial, that perhaps a lot of us recognize in ourselves. It's that connection to death. And I think that it's had a resurgence because we're this death denying society, very much so. But, you know, especially say in the US, in the UK, in Canada, but in Mexico, you know, death is often in your face, so you can't really deny it. So I think that's why it had this resurgence there. But I also want to say on a side note that I don't only see Santa Muerte as a folk saint of death. For me, she's also the folk saint of life and rebirth, because this is really, if you dig down deep into ethno-archaeology and the philosophy behind this, this is a non-dualistic practice. In a way, life and death, I mean, I've written about this again in more academic writing. In the book, I touch on it, but I don't go super deep into that. For me, and within this faith, life and death are like two sides of a sheet of paper. They're inextricable. You can't have one without the other. They're conjoined. And I think that Santa Muerte is, she can bring life to anything you want. Love life, right? Sex life, business, success in business, good health. So she can give you that life, but she's that ebb and flow. So she giveth, but she also taketh away. So she can bring death to your enemies, you know, separate a couple, stop your husband or your wife or your boyfriend or your girlfriend from having an affair with someone. You know, so she can bring an end to things, make someone's business go badly, bring vices and destruction upon them. So she's just very omnipotent, protean, but I would say also very non-dualistic at the end of the day.
Indeed, yeah. And as you write in your book, and I quote, death is supreme, and you were told by her, quote, life is only a path to death. And I think that's, I think you hit it on the head. The idea that we've become rejected death, when the Mesoamericans and the Egyptians saw death was just a flowing, a stage. It was all part of one eternity that we are flowing, and everything is just as important. And they saw reality, I think, in a richer way, and we've lost that, and in a strange way, becoming more nihilistic because we don't accept death. And I was trying to think about Santa Muerte, who could we parallel to? And I don't know if you have any ideas, because I was thinking, for example, Persephone. Persephone seen as the goddess of the spring, the mysteries were loyal to her, but people forget that in the Greek religion, when she went down to Hades, she took her new job seriously. She was the goddess of death, too. She took on that responsibility, but she was also the goddess of life, and Hecate more or less can have that attitude. What do you think?
Yeah, Hecate has that attitude. She's been compared to the Norse Viking goddess Hel.
Yes.
Also Kali, right, who destroys. But I'm not really, that, you know, people will look for these sort of Jungian archetypes and try to find similarities in all these death goddesses, death deities, death spirits. And there definitely are, but I like to also focus on their uniqueness, because I feel that each one has her own powers, idiosyncrasies, and each of them speak uniquely to different people. I mean, at the same time as well, you know, Santa Muerte is very difficult to codify, to define, because she is polymorphic. You know, she's what the anthropologist Victor Turner called multivocal, which means polysemantic, which means, you know, she speaks to different people in different ways. But, you know, that's what I find so beautiful about her. And I think religion is, spirituality is like that, is that it is multifaceted. And in a way, like a beautiful, powerful, magnificent, magical woman, she's not going to have one side to her. She's going to be multifaceted and have all these different powers and aspects. And, you know, she's a complex being.
Indeed. And what would you say in your studies, what is some of the biggest misconceptions about Santa Muerte?
Well, obviously that she's a narco saint is the big one that's been pushed by Breaking Bad in a lot of films, even in Ghost Recon. You know, there's always this
Dexter,
very
dark, there's a,
yeah, that she's sort of narco satanic, which she absolutely is not. And, you know, there's no Satanism going on here at all. And I think that this misconception comes from the fact that a lot of Western people, you know, in the US, UK, Canada, are so closed off to death that they immediately see it as macabre. And I think it shows us how death denying people are. I also think that there is deep rooted sexism and racism involved there, because whenever we see her being venerated in films, it's generally by dangerous Mexican men who are barbaric and going to commit acts of violence and feel vindicated because they supposedly have her on their side. Now, I would be lying if I said to you that there are narcos that venerate Santa Muerte. Of course there are, but there are narcos that venerate Saint Jude. There are narcos who turn to God. There are narcos who turn to the Virgin Mary. I mean, just look at Italy, right? The Gomorrah, the Mexican, not the Mexican, the Italian mafia, rather, you know, they would give all this money to churches to make themselves supposedly feel better about their criminal acts. So I think that we've sort of tried to pigeonhole one religion here in a very erroneous and misguided manner. And I think the other problem with that is that there's a huge deal of racism, because it pigeonholes, you know, Mexican, especially Mexican men, as barbaric. And it's also sexist, because it takes away from the many women who are, you know, at the forefront of the faith. And the most important religious leaders of Santísima Muerte, of the spirituality, are women, like Doña Queta, who established the first public altar in Tepito. And, you know, it's basically, I mean, I don't want to call her the high priestess of Santa Muerte, because she's not, you know, issuing decrees or laying down the law or anything of that nature, but she's a very, very important leader and deeply, deeply respected. So,
yeah, these things are just going to happen when you have a new movement, a new heresy, if you would. And what makes her unique, and maybe you can speak to this, is that, as they say, she's a saint, non-canonized, but she's not human. She never was human. She's a goddess, but she's not really a goddess, right? I mean, it's still within the Christian mythology, and she's still somewhere. She's not up there with the Virgin Mary, but she is. And I understand. I lived in Mexico, so magic realism and paradoxes was not a problem when I grew up spiritually. You know, it's just, you're fine with that.
Yeah, she's sort of a folk saint, so she's not recognized by the Catholic Church. Also, what I would say is there's many different ways of looking at her. You know, she is Queen of Death. She is this very domineering personality. But in some ways as well, if we take this back again, ethno-archaeologically, and you know, do away with Eurocentric ways of thinking about things, mm-hmm. we could also conceive of her. And I think, you know, I think, Miguel, you have sort of a Gnostic understanding of things. We could see her as a sacred force if we take it down to the bare bones. And that's how in Mesoamerica, you know, the gods, the goddesses were perceived, even though they were personalities and they were human-like, you know, what we call anthropomorphic. If you really took it down to the bare bones, literally in this case with Santa Muerte, we were talking about, they called these forces, you know, it's like a great wind, a great spirit, a great breath. It's something that animates, that imbues with life or potentially with death in this case. And it's a very animistic faith, I would say as well.
I love it. And do you ever worry that like all movements eventually it will become more orthodox? Somebody's going to come up with some rules and tablets and all that? Or do you think this might be different, like Taoism or some other movement or Gnosticism that you can never really pin them down as much as you try?
I think there are always people trying to do that. There are people trying to make it into a closed practice. There are people trying to say, you can't do this, you can't do that. There was a huge scandal that erupted when my book came out about the Blood Pact. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember the Blood Pact, yeah. Miguel.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
I was going to ask you about that. I thought it was amazing.
And lots of people saying you should not be giving your blood to Santa Muerte and trying to, you know, create all these rules. But I mean, I just thought it was almost comical. If you're worshiping death, of course, the most basic and elemental offering would be blood, you know, which is the elixir of life. And if you have any understanding of Santa Muerte's background, deriving from Aztec, Mixtec, Zapotec, Maya death goddesses, they were always giving blood to these death deities. I mean, that was, you know, and it wasn't an easy thing. I mean, we all know this kind of, I don't really like to bring it up because I think we try to always depict the Aztec as ripping people's hearts out with their bare hands during these gory ceremonies, and people always think of them that way, and they were obviously much more nuanced and complex than that. But, you know, they were ripping the beating heart out for a reason, because the heart, you know, pumps the blood and the blood was coming out. And that was a really important offering. So, of course, with Santa Muerte, people are going to be offering blood. I mean, it's a bit of a no-brainer, if you ask me. So I'm not sure why. I felt that it was almost a sort of Catholic overlay, or I don't really understand where the stigma was coming from with that.
Yeah, it's odd. It's coming from somewhere strange. Yeah, somewhere you can't trust, because I don't think it makes sense. And I understand.
And people were always bloodletting, you know, in pre-Hispanic Mexico. The Maya were very famous for it. And they would take stingray tails, obsidian blades, and they would let blood so that they could have vision, so that they could commune with the gods. The Zapotec had a lot of, they had a big death cult. I mean, cult I'm using here loosely. I'm not talking about let's drink the Kool-Aid. I'm talking about, you know, a spiritual movement. Cult has a lot of negative connotations I find in English, but that's not what I mean. So they would offer blood to their ancestors as a gift. So, you know, I'm sort of stymied by the whole.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with people. And I understand, I mean, I've done 3 or 4 shows on Santa Muerte, and every time I do a show, because I really like her, I get blowback in my comments, like, narco, dark death goddesses, and angry emails, and I don't even answer, I just roll my eyes. I'm like, if you ain't gonna get it, yeah, go ahead.
On the narcos, I have to touch on this, because yes, I get that too. And the other thing is, I think that people completely confuse the narcos, and they think they're this monolithic group of, you know, quintessentially evil men who are just out to do terrible things. I'm not going to lie, I've met narcos while doing my research, while, you know, living in Mexico, and some of them, you know, are just your average person who is living in abject poverty, and you know, less than $10 a day. They've got a family to feed. If there's some kind of emergency, you know, they've got nothing to fall back on. You know, they can't go and get, you know, there's not all this unemployment benefits and state aid and all this kind of stuff going on. So some of the people I have met involved in that are actually people just trying to do the very best that they can to just bring home the bread or the tortilla, in this case, for their family. And I often hear stories, you know, for example, medical care. I know in the US, that's a big problem as well, right? In Mexico, where I've done my research, it's well known at one of the local hospitals that they do a botch up job. People, you know, are like, can die during operations. They've left sponges in people's bodies that have gotten infected. I mean, you hear these awful stories. So people want to go private, and they, you know, if they need an operation for someone in their family, and also there's a long waiting list. So what are you going to do if you're earning less than $10 a day? Your mum could die if you don't pay for this operation. If somebody offers you some work, and lots of this work is not violent, you know, not everyone's going around with AK-47s and bazookas. No. Some people are just, you know, involved in logistics. Less, you know, I'm not going to say too much about it, but moving things around, and, you know, they don't have, let's just say they don't have roles that are violent. These people are also potentially narcos. But in my mind, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to condone the drug trade here, but I think we need to have a bit more nuanced understanding of why people are involved in this profession, because there are no other opportunities. And because if you need to make money, you know, if someone's offering you $2,000 for 2 days work when you potentially can't even earn that in a year, again, you know, it's a bit of an obvious choice, right?
Yeah, the evil is at the top. It's not even the narcos. Mexico, again, I live there. I have lots of friends, family, is, I think, number 13 in GDP in the world economy. It's one of the top 15 economies in the world, with a fraction of the population of the United States. Where's all the money? You know where all the money is. It's not getting to the people. It's a few families at the top. And they've probably been responsible for millions of lives of death. So
yeah, and it's not just the narcos. I mean, it's such a complex picture. You're talking about the politicians, and on both sides of the border, people are involved and making money.
Yeah.
And
a finance comes from the United States. We fuel the narcos. That's a secret nobody wants to face.
It's a secret. No, so let's all blame the Mexicans and be racist about
right,
it.
Right, right.
And let's not think about all the people, all the soldiers, you know, who have to be equipped with guns and gear. And who's making all of that, all those guns and gear? Oh, U.S. companies. You know, most people in Mexico who are shot by a gun are shot by a gun made in the U.S. So who's making money off of that? So it's a very complex and nuanced picture. And we like to simplify things, and people like to simplify, again, about Santa Muerte. And yeah. So narcos do turn to her. Hey, there's a candle for that, the black candle, right? Protecting you. And she's, you know what I like about her? She's amoral. And the old pre-Hispanic death deities were too. So I think that's part of her appeal. If you want to ask her to get laid, or if you want to ask her for protection against the law, you know, she may well listen. She doesn't, death does not judge, because death comes to us all.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you want, I love, it can be addiction, health, anything you need. And you provide all these wonderful prayers, rituals, everything that you've gotten from your exploration of the people of Santa Muerte. And interesting on the blood thing, again, I think it's silly. I watched this movie, Cressida, called The Society of the Snow. And I've watched, and it's based on the crash in the Andes, you know, the rugby player that crashed on the Andes, and they survived for 2 months. And I've watched all their documentaries, read their books, because I find the story so fascinating that these guys were up there and they survived. And what kept them going was two things. There was really was their Catholic faith that they could go. And then, and people don't want to hear this, but when it came time for cannibalism, their Catholic faith allowed them to do these actions, because they were like, you know, my body of Christ. Christ gave their body to us and his blood. So we should eat to survive. So I think sometimes it's like you said, it's more nuanced when we do these things.
Yeah, and talking of blood, I think it's in the Eucharist where you drink the blood of Christ, right? And
Right.
that's just
And it's not supposed
symbolized
to be
wine.
symbolic. When I was raised Catholic, it was not symbolic.
Yeah, and you drink wine. So I don't know why people have an issue with the blood pact, to be honest. I mean, I think it's a bit squeamish, you know, it goes along with the death denying thing in some ways.
Exactly. And Vance, what do you think? Any questions as we're going, we're waxing philosophical and social here?
I was interested in them calling Santa Muerte a religion, you know, the fastest growing religion, right? So do they have group services? Are they have Santa Muerte churches that are oriented around her? And if so, what are they like?
Yeah, they have chapels which hold rosaries usually every month. But because this is a very laissez-faire religion, you know, there's no hierarchy. There's no clergy telling people what to do. So chapels sprout up independently by, you know, people who feel called to start their own chapel. And again, as I said before, a lot of women tend to do this. And it is very ad hoc. People pretty much play it the way that they want. So at some chapels, you'll find people just come to give offerings. At some chapels, there is, you know, there may be a resident bruja or brujo, a resident witch who offers their services. So it really, really depends. And that's part of the beauty as well of Santa Muerte, is you can go to all these different chapels and they all have a unique flavor. Some may have just one effigy, like the chapel in Tepito owned by Doña Queta, which just has this one statue of Santa Muerte that she dresses, you know, in the most opulent and beautiful gowns, which are changed every first of the month. And some chapels, you know, have loads of effigies, you know, 5, 10 more. So this is really a religion, I would say, or a spirituality with heterodoxy and heteropraxy. People sort of practice in their own way what feels right to them and pretty much do what they want. But as I said in my book, there are central tenets or central things that you should abide by. So ideally, as a Santa Muerte devotee, having an altar, of course, is primordial, and having a few specific things that she needs, such as water, fruit, something representing the earth, candles, obviously, incense, candy, and some booze, because she loves her libations.
And cigarettes, yeah. She likes booze and cigarettes.
And cigarettes. But that, of course, comes from the ancient tradition of giving tobacco, right? So that's vital. And I would say, you know, if you're a devotee or a budding devotee, what I learned in Mexico is this, you sort of can't really go wrong if you stick to one basic thing, which is just to pray every day. And maybe, you know, light a candle, and it can be the cheapest white candle. This is not a faith which demands a lot of material investment. I know some devotees love to buy all these statues and spoil their Santa Muerte with expensive liquor. But we're talking about a faith that, you know, has come from Mexico, where people do not necessarily have that much to give, but they have prayer to give and they have heartfelt feeling to give, and a simple prayer every single day with a simple cheap white candle is worth more than, you know, buying your Santa Muerte, all this expensive stuff, and not spending that time bonding with her. Because it's through prayer that you create this bond, this relationship, which is reciprocal, you know. And it's not, some people think it's a quid pro quo, where I give you this, okay, you'll give that to me. In my mind, it's not, it can come across as that, but it's more about creating a relationship. It's just like with your mum, or your brother, or your best friend, or your lover. You know, you may give gifts to that person, but that's because you care for them. You're thinking about them, and they're going to do the same for you. It's not because you're trying to bribe them to get something out of them.
And even then, it's more of a, yeah, it is like a relationship. You talk about how once you did a devotion, you asked for something, and then you had really bad luck the next day, but then in the long run, things worked out. It's like she wasn't just going to give you what you wanted. She's actually guiding you to where you need to be.
Yeah, I like the way that she gives you signs and constantly. And that's, you know, how you build this bond with her as well. She'll send you signs, visions, dreams. I love working with her so much, because you can rely, for those of us who are really in tune with our intuition and working with insight through visions, through dreams, through all these non-rational ways, you know, that the Western world has rejected a lot of, this faith is so refreshing because it encourages you to do that and get in touch with those aspects of yourself. And the more that you do, the more you can further that conversation with her. I mean, just today, I knew I had to buy her pink roses. I had promised her pink roses. And I was really tired. I knew I was coming to this podcast. And I was sort of in a rush. And I thought, oh, really? Am I going to stop? But I saw this shop and there was a parking place close by. And I thought, I'm going to pull in. I'm going to buy these roses. I promised her. And I went in. And the lady was just lovely off the bat. And I thought, well, that's a good sign. And I bought these beautiful pink roses. And the moment I got into my car, I saw red Santa Muerte, the Santa Muerte of love. Now, you could call this pareidolia, but I think it's pareidolia, which when you see, people say that, you know, you're seeing things that are not sort of really there. Yeah. But a few cars in front of me, there was this sort of truck, and it had, I don't know whether it was a something to pick cars up or, but it was shaped exactly almost like Santa Muerte. And I took a picture of it and I thought, this is crazy. Is this me thinking, okay, you know, seeing things? But I thought, no, you know, why is this right in front? I think this is a sign from her, red Santa Muerte, to say, thank you. You got me my roses. I know you were tired. I know you had a tough day. And I think we just have to accept those signs. People can be very skeptical, but you know, I recommend that in my book, and I'm all about that in my book. And I really recommend working that way when you give offerings. And I think I talk about it. You know, look on your apple, your banana, whatever you've given her. Sometimes shapes come up. There could be signs. If you give her a cup of coffee, sometimes, you know, a swirl may come up in that coffee. And I talk a lot about theromancy, which is a really important way of working, not just with Santa Muerte, but I've had people tell me, this can work if you're doing any kind of witchcraft or magic with any kind of deity. Theromancy is divination through candle wax. So you look at the shapes that come out in candle wax, and those will really, really help you, whether it's to bond with Santa Muerte or to even find out whether your spell work was successful in any tradition.
What are some other rules that you have for the audience? For example, yeah, you talk about the altar. We just talked about how she likes to be the number one, although as you write in your book, there's often Santa Muerte with Saint Jude, who's probably the most popular saint in Mexico. And I think there's another. Who was the other figure? Jesus Malverde?
There's also El Niño de Atocha, which you might see occasionally. You might see Saint Michael, and you know Doña Teta in Tepito. She even has orishas from Santeria. So there are people will mix and match. But I think for the neophyte and for myself personally speaking, I prefer to just devote to her, just have her on my altar. I mean, you can call in little friends for outside help, but in my mind, she's so powerful. You know, what could be more powerful than death? Death is the one force that takes us all. There is no escaping it, no matter how much money, riches, well-being you have, no matter who you are. Death is the only truth. And I think in a postmodern world, or potentially post-postmodern world, if we're going to get philosophical about it, you know, there is no truth. It's all fake news. But there is one truth, and that is Santa Muerte, death.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a saint for taxes. Death and taxes, right?
Well, you can even escape taxes, right? I mean, there are ways of getting around paying your taxes. I mean, plenty of people have offshore bank accounts. And, you know, I mean, I wish I had one in Switzerland, but personally, I don't have enough money to put in a bank account there. So you can find ways to fiddle your taxes, but you cannot cheat death. And that's why one hard and fast rule is to, when you make a promise to her, because that's a good way of working with her. I mean, when you're asking her for something, you're praying, you're petitioning, you might want to give an offering, but if you're asking for something, you should always promise something, because she's done something for you. So if you make that promise, you should always make good on that promise. I mean, don't forget. People try to say, oh, Santa Muerte forgives, oh, Santa Muerte this, Santa Muerte that. And I'm like, well, yeah, but how much patience do you expect her to have? You know, I mean, you can pray to her and say, look, I'm sorry if I've forgotten any of these offerings, maybe remind me, or here's something in case I forgot something the other day. But I really wouldn't mess around with death if I were you. And I've learned that the hard way. When, you know, not necessarily with not giving offerings, but when I've been down in Mexico, sometimes I said to her, show me who you really are, show me your power. And I've just had very, very intense things happen to me and seen death around me. So I feel that her power is very awesome, not as in, oh, that's awesome, but as in it invokes awe in me.
But isn't that the perhaps the greatest thing too, that death is all encompassing, but death is not really death, is it? It's really a continuation. Just we leave this egoic self behind.
Absolutely. And I think that's another thing that we can really learn from death. And I thank you for bringing that up, is that I've really learned not to judge people. And I've really been humbled by her. And that's why in my book, I always say, be humble. That would be another rule. Be humble before her. You know, don't come with all this ego. Don't come with all this ego into the faith and with other practitioners and with people around you. I mean, before I came to Santa Muerte, I, you know, I wasn't the most judgmental of persons, but I was a pretty judgmental person. I mean, I wouldn't have spoken, say, to a heroin, a person who uses heroin, regularly. I might have judged them. I might have judged someone who's involved in the narco trafficking industry. And through my research, I have met people who are in these walks of life. And I have learned that, you know, they are equal to me. I'm no better than them. Just because, you know, I come in with a doctorate degree, does that mean that, hey, I'm a better person than them? Or that I didn't do drugs last week, does that mean I'm a better person than them? No. And, you know, it's made me aware that also charitable acts and giving are really important as well, to sort of give back. I think giving back is very important. And then I think with death of the ego and the continuation of life, there's an Aztec poet who wrote, you know, we don't come here to live. We only come here to dream. You know, he speaks about how we're just sleeping and basically says that perhaps the afterlife is the real life. So, you know, how can we tell, right?
Exactly. How can we tell?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the afterlife. Do practitioners of Santa Muerte, they generally believe in reincarnation or the more traditional heaven kind of model? Or what do they believe?
I think you have a whole plethora of different beliefs. Some definitely believe in reincarnation. I mean, some people, I have a sort of what I call soul family down in Mexico, a group of people that I'm very close to through this chapel that I always go to there. And they're like, oh, we knew you in a past life. This is not the first time that you've been around here. And I said, okay, well, that makes sense because I always feel at home here. But there are others who believe, you know, very much in heaven and going through the pearly gates and all that sort of thing. And of course, Santa Muerte acts as a psychopomp in all of that, in that as a psychopomp, you know, she's going to take your hand and lead you through to the other side. But what's really interesting about that is in some of the rosaries to Santa Muerte, the Mexican prayers, this is almost configured as the underworld. You know, she's almost like a queen of the underworld, which very much comes back to the pre-Hispanic way of thinking about the afterlife.
So is she associated with hell in any way in some of these people's minds?
Not that I know of. I think the only people who would associate her with that are the people who think she's satanic. So, you know, I don't have much involvement to be with those kinds of people, to be quite frank.
And asking for a friend, as they say, what's your advice if somebody wants to get a statue of Santa Muerte on this side of the border?
Well, are you talking about purchasing one?
Yes.
Well, there's lots. Depending on where you live, there may be botanicas around you. If there's a Mexican or Latino population, Latinx population at all in your city, you'll definitely encounter shops, stores called botanicas, where they sell accoutrements of all kinds for the different faith spiritualities, whether it's, you know, Santeria, Candomblé, but usually they'll sell Santa Muerte stuff as well. So you can usually go there to buy a statue, to buy candles. But again, you know, this is not about splashing out. If you want to start off with a printed image that you've just printed off the internet, and I know plenty of devotees who have started with this, or just a prayer card you've printed out, that's absolutely fine. That can be your starting point. It's not really about the materiality, you know, it's really about the faith. And in Mexico, as I said, you know, not everyone, lots of people do not have money to splash out on such things. So a printed image or even a tiny little statue with a nice altar, just with some, you know, apples, as I said, candle, booze, water, tobacco, candy is enough to start with and even finish with. I mean, as you don't have to get grandiose with these things.
And what's also interesting too is that when you talk about spell work, brujería, you say one of the important things is to work with the phases of the moon. I thought that was interesting. I didn't know she would be connected to the moon, speaking of Artemis.
Well, of course. And I mean, I think this again goes back to pre-Hispanic Mexico and the linkage to the astral realm. And, you know, some chapels I've been to will literally have, I'm thinking of one particular chapel, it just has painted on the ceiling, the night sky, and there's this connection, you know, to the astral realms, to the moon, because she's associated with the night. You know, she's vespertinal, she's got the owl at her side. So she's very much, and this is where we get away, even though she is a folk saint, we get away a little bit from the Catholicism, because what saint do you know that's associated with a time of day? I mean, nobody apart from Santa Muerte. She's definitely associated with the night. You know, one of her monikers is Lady of the Night, which kind of sounds wrong in English. Señora de la Noche, I've heard her be called that. So she's definitely connected to the moon, and a wonderful, beautiful ritual you can do is on full moon, you can create moon water to use in rituals and cleansing, so that, you know, just leave a cup outside underneath the full moon or inside, you know, where the moon rays might hit it, and leave your Santa Muerte statues there too to empower them, to cleanse them with the moon rays. I mean, if you can do it outside, it's even more beautiful. That's why I love going down to Mexico, because the weather's always wonderful. And you know, you can work outside with the elements. And that's something I really recommend to your listeners, the devotees. If you're going to a place of nature, whether, you know, you're in a hot or a cold place, bring your statues with you. If you're going on a hike in nature, or you're going to the beach, or whatever you're doing outside, and you're getting, you know, if you're usually in an urban setting, or if you live in the countryside, take advantage of that. She is so connected to the earth, and your ritual, your spell work will be so much more powerful if you're working with the elements.
No, it makes perfect sense. And you mentioned the owl, and that, for those that might not know, in Mesoamerican culture or Latino culture, the owl has the same connotation, a wisdom, messenger of the death, or symbol.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people think that that comes from the sort of Minerva type side of things, which it potentially does. But also in pre-Hispanic Mexico, again, trawling through the ethno-archaeological records and looking at how iconographically the death deities were represented, they were often represented with owls, because owls were, in the Popol Vuh, the Maya book, owls were the messengers of the dead. And there's all sorts of folkloric stories around owls. And the old saying is, you know, when the owl screeches, the Indian dies. But interestingly, what I found in my research, and I've been writing on that from a sort of more academic stance lately, is that some Mexicans will make a differentiation between different owls. Mm-hmm. And so the owl that you generally see with Santa Muerte that has the little ears in Mexico, or at least in Oaxaca, where I've done a lot of research, the tecolute, as they call it, they say that that is Santa Muerte's companion, but is also going to send you messages from the other side, from her, from, you know, whatever you need to know. But the owl that doesn't have the little ears, which I think, you know, I need to look into the species here, but there are different species of owl. And I think that could be more like a barn owl type owl. And that they will just call a buho, just it's more like a regular owl to them. That is a message that someone will die. So they make that distinction. And not everybody does this, but I've encountered some devotees who have explained this to me, that depending on the owl that comes to you, it's either a good message or, you know, a message, a good portent, or it could be an omen of imminent death. And the other fascinating thing that I've heard about, and, you know, the devotees often witness, is that your statues will move. They will potentially give you signs, move around their sides, turn their back to you. And these are all things to pay attention to. And where I've gone to the most to do my research in southern Mexico, literally, I've heard so many stories about the oldest Santa Muerte chapel, the oldest Santa Muerte statue in this chapel. She comes out at night and walks around. And people, I have heard multiple stories of people seeing her walking along the highway. One man was just scared witness because she showed up on the bonnet of his car. Did you say bonnet in the US? There's another word for it, the front of your car.
Hood.
Hood.
Hood. the hood of the car, and started grimacing at him. And he was like, what the blazes is going on here? And he didn't know what to think. And then she just suddenly disappeared. That turned out to be a bad sign, because a week later, I think his granny died or something. So, and then I heard a story from several people about how she takes taxis sometimes, how this taxi driver just was really afraid because one day she just got into his car and he saw this dark shadowy figure get into the back of his taxi at night. This is always at night. And she asked him to go to the local town. He dropped her off and he saw her get out. And obviously he did not ask her to pay. You're not going to ask that for a fare. So, yeah. You know, you just hear very incredible, interesting stories. She speaks to people on mobile phones as well, you know, and love this interplay between technology. You know, we always say, oh, no, technology, you know, is so different from spirituality. But if you take a phone call in that chapel or near it, sometimes she will speak to people on their phone and give them messages.
Wow, very practical. I think, yeah, and she's going to be as famous as Elvis if she keeps showing up to all these different places. So,
well, she does show up. And, you know, and I think we have to reconsider. We make such assumptions if we think in Eurocentric terms. You know, we think that waking life is distinct from dream world. And we think, dreams aren't real, right? Dreams aren't real. What happens? But if you go to Mesoamerica or even, you know, Europe in more pagan times, dreams were as real as waking life. Mm-hmm. So if you receive messages in dreams from Santa Muerte or any other deity that you may be working with, you should take these very seriously. You know, Freud did us a great disfavor when he came along and said, oh, you know, dreams are just your subconscious mind, you know, giving you messages, usually about sex, always with Freud, right? Because everybody wants to have sex with their dad.
Or their mom, yeah.
Or their mom, all of this nonsense. So he did us a great disservice there, because, yes, you may have dreams that are the workings of your inner mind, but sometimes messages will come to you in dreams, and those are taken very seriously in Mexico. And I've learned to work with my dreams. And I've always had dreams since I was a child. I always had these kind of psychic abilities. But I didn't, you know, I kind of stepped away from them when I went to Oxford and was inculcated with all this education. Right. Even though I went and I did field work in Africa for a while, I was still on witchcraft and all of this. I was still distant from that, sort of rejected that side of myself. And coming to Santa Muerte brought me back to all my precognitive abilities and what I had experienced as a child, because I had seen ghosts as a child and I had prophetic dreams and all these very interesting things. So I love Santa Muerte faith because it's open to all of this and it encourages this.
Yeah, like you said, the dream world is with us. Our ancestors haven't gone anywhere. The spirits are here. I mean, yeah, living in Mexico or in Portugal, you still get that. Yeah, that magical thinking, as they call it, that animistic ability that we've lost, and it's beautiful. So more entertaining. It's a better life, richer life.
Yeah, I think we've lost touch, you know, inside. If you have too much science, you know, you lose touch. And we have to remember that science even came from magical thinking. When you look at, you know, John Dee and people like that, they were alchemists, right? They were trying to make gold from. So somehow along the way, there was this division created between science and religion. But, you know, we never, and spirituality, the magic never went away. We just didn't want to look at it anymore.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at Sir Isaac Newton. He was an alchemist and a mystic. Look at all the people that came up with quantum physics, Einstein, Heisenberg. They were into Taoism and the I Ching. You know, they were into mysticism. I think when they both work together, that's when humanity can move, you know, move forward instead of how we are now, just stuck destroying things, exploiting people. You know what we've been doing for the last, whatever, 200, 300 years.
And the other thing that's great about Santa Muerte is because it really embraces shamanic traditions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of part of that. And in Mexico, I mean, shamanism is kind of a loose term for it, more accurately called curanderismo in Mexico. So curanderos are people who, you know, heal through herbs, which is something I go over in the book, that you can use very specific herbs to do baths of yourself, of your altar, of your Santa Muerte statues, to cleanse them. And these things really do work. I mean, I'm not going to tell everybody, you know, go and do that, it's going to solve all your problems. But if you're carrying a lot of heavy energy, Santa Muerte can really help you to lift that off using herbs, using natural methods. And I love how the faith encourages the usage of all these things that otherwise would potentially be forgotten.
Oh, indeed. And what I like, again, your book is great. I'm going to treasure it because of all the different rituals, herbs and everything. But you're also one of the few writers, I've read quite a few Santa Muerte books, that actually deals with the idea of entheogens. So is that, entheogens can be part of your Santa Muerte, or is it part? It's part of many people in Mexico, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, again, Santa Muerte praxis is going to be different wherever you go because people have access to different resources.
Right.
So we always, you know, no religion is, I mean, it's stupid to think any spirituality would be static or the same everywhere or the same across time or space. That's just not happening. Everybody brings their unique spin to things and whatever resources they have. But in some parts of Mexico, entheogens are used. You know, morning glory is a big one. And people definitely, some people definitely like to engage in that aspect. So it depends on how you want to bond with her. And, you know, where I live currently, marijuana is legal, so I can say this. I've had some very interesting, I mean, I don't get high all the time, but sometimes I do enjoy, I'm not going to lie, getting a little bit intoxicated. And I've had some very, I don't think I fully understood the non-dualism of Santa Muerte until I accidentally one night got extremely high. And I say accidentally because I bought this drink, this THC drink from a local dispenser. And I drank it and I thought, gosh, I'm really not that high. And I had in my fridge some THC and some CBD oil, actually for medicinal purposes, because as I've mentioned, you know, I've had health problems in the past and I find that these are good painkillers. And I thought, well, I'll just take some CBD oil because maybe it will help, you know, interplay with the THC and I'll get a little bit, you know, more inebriated. Now, I must have actually been high and not realized it because I accidentally took THC oil instead of CBD oil and I got so obliterated. And I went to my Santa Muerte altar and I thought, well, wow, this has gone too far. But I suddenly understood the non-dualism. She started explaining it to me and I started seeing how everything is permeated with life and death at the same time. And I don't think I had fully understood it and fully felt it until then. So, you know, I'm not telling people to go out and get high, but if, you know, do whatever rocks your boat and you can work with her in whatever way you want. This is what I love about her. You know, there's no, and that's what I say in the book, you know, do what feels right for you. And I give people prayers, I give people spells, but I say in the book, make this your own. work with this in the way that feels right to you.
Yeah, great advice. Great advice. So by non-dual, you mean everything is connected.
Yeah, this is not a Manichean way of thinking. You know, it's not like death is the end of life and the opposite of life. You know, death is definitely not the opposite of life, because Santa Muerte is both life and death. And this is an animistic faith. You know, animism used to be a sort of dirty word for a long time in the social sciences and anthropology, but it's seen a resurgence. And we recognize now that animism is actually a very beautiful thing. If we recognize that everything has a spirit, you know, even the river has a spirit, the tree has a spirit, we're actually a lot more respectful to our environment. And so obviously this is an animistic faith, because if you saw death as death, then death can't be alive. But clearly Santa Muerte is alive. Her statues are alive. She walks around at night. She gets into taxis, for crying out loud. So this is what I mean by a non-dualistic faith. And if you're working animistically, I mean, I don't go deeply into it in the book, but I talk about working with herbs and tobacco. And in a sense, that's also animistic, because you're recognizing the power, the sacredness that these items have. And, you know, in Mexico, people, when they work with a cigar, for example, they will say, puro, puro, te conjuro, you know, cigar, cigar, I'm conjuring you. So you're working with the spirit of tobacco, or you're working with the spirit of basil. And if you're working with basil, you know, thank the plant. I mean, these are all ways of recognizing that, that everything in our world is alive, but also everything in our world is dead, right? I mean, sorry to be frank about it, but you and I, Miguel, we have an expiry date, right? Everything does around us right now. This computer that I'm speaking to you on, the books in my house are going to fade away, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. And that's all right, you know? So, I mean, I think that's why Santa Muerte, people think it's macabre, but it's so life positive, because if I recognize I could potentially die tomorrow, I'm actually more grateful for today and for my loved ones around me. And, you know, I started the book, I think, with that, and I ended the book with that, thanking Santa Muerte for life and for all the beautiful, wonderful things and people that I've met, and also the wonderful people I've met through her. I mean, I've met so many. I have so much respect for the people of Mexico who have, you know, blessed me with this knowledge and encouraged me to write it down and preserve these things and open their hearts and their homes and their chapels to me. I mean, I hate all this racism that I see. Mexican people are absolutely amazing. I just have the deepest respect for them.
Oh yeah, same here. Same here for sure. Yeah, we just, you and I just said, Vance, we got caught in the trick that we believe time was linear and we forgot eternity is everywhere. The dream is here.
We're living the dream right now.
Yeah, we are. We are. That's it's up to us. Well, Vance, as we get to the end of this amazing interview, any last questions or remarks?
Yeah, would you say that she loves her devotees, and you know, is how much love is there in this practice?
Oh, there's the love is sempiternal. You know, it's endless. Of course, she loves her devotees, and you know, she's such a nuanced character, because she is a loving, caring mother, and she really looks after devotees and looks after those that other people or other deities might not look after. You know, I've met people who are in prison or who have been in prison. I've met, as I said, narcos, sicarios. I've met people who use drugs. I've met people, you know, who are sex workers that society would normally reject, that the Catholic Church in its truest form would reject. And Santa Muerte, you know, she has love for you and I, and she has love for all these people. She does not judge, and she will truly look after her own. She can also be very vengeful, you know, and bring death to your enemies. So you've got to be careful with her. But I would say she's kind of like that harsh, tough, cabrona mother, you know, that can be, you know, that can equally, like in Mexico, the mothers will throw sandals and flip-flops at kids when they're naughty and stuff.
And chancla.
Yes.
I remember getting the chancla when I was a kid.
Okay. So she can potentially do that, but she can also be, you know, the spoiling mother that cares for you and that really looks out for you in your moment of need when nobody else does.
Yeah, that's the part that bothers me, to be honest, is the vengeful, you know, bringing death and negativity upon people part of it. That's a part that, you know, that I really can't accept for myself.
Well, I think that you have to take into consideration, you know, I spent enough time in Mexico and other places in the world where there's extreme violence, and there's extreme violence everywhere. I mean, if someone brings extreme violence to your doorstep, you know, and there is femicide, there's a lot of violence because of the drug wars, which, as I've said, are nuanced in Mexico. Maybe, you know, you don't want to turn the other cheek. Maybe you're tired of that. Or, you know, even just from a more simple perspective, if your man or your woman keeps treating you bad, right, keeps on cheating on you, not showing up when they said they would, not doing the things, hey, you might get pissed off, right? And so Santa Muerte kind of understands that. So that's where I relate to that. I've had people, you know, really vex me. And sometimes you're tired of being a doormat.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we do live in a culture where the secular powers just have not served women in many countries. So you got to do what
and
you got
to
do.
And I've seen women, you know, who have had to deal with femicide in the family.
That in Mexico.
You know, rape. I mean, the figures are scary, you know, with regards to femicide and rape in Latin America. It just really seems to happen with impunity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I mean, one of the great devotees as well, who is now dead, Enriqueta Vargas, her son was shot and the state did nothing about it, you know, to track down the killers. So she turned to Santa Muerte for vengeance. And I think a lot of, you know, mothers in particular are always suffering in Mexico, whether it's, you know, their daughters or potentially their sons being killed, disappeared, and nobody does anything about it. So why are we really surprised that the people get vengeful and are asking Santa Muerte to be judge, jury, and executioner? Because, you know, nobody else is stepping in. You know, are the police stepping in and putting these people in jail? No. So who else do you have to turn to?
The mafia. that's how the mafia came about, partially, you know, right? People banding together trying to get justice. So you were talking about the Italian mafia earlier. Maybe there's a similar situation there.
There is, and people will do that. And there is a sort of vigilante justice, because sometimes the police don't do their job. So one village where I always stay, and when I go to Mexico, I was told this story of this man who came in from out of town and he started thieving, robbing from everybody in the village. And, you know, they went to the authorities, nothing happened. So the local men just took it upon themselves to do justice. And they said, let's close all the exits to this, our little village, and close it off and let everyone do a manhunt and find this fellow. So they did. They closed everything off and they found him. And they took him down to the beach and they tied him to a stick and they beat him. And they said, you know, let this serve as a lesson to you. Next time, you're not going to leave alive. We're just going to beat you for today. And so he left with his tail in between his legs and never came back and never, you know, robbed from anybody again. But, you know, that's what you have to resort to in places where there isn't care on your doorstep.
Indeed, indeed. And all gods have a shadow side, as we can see.
And she, as I said, she's non-dualistic. So you can't expect her to be moralistic. You know, this is not Manichean about light versus dark, black versus white, you know, life versus death. She is all encompassing. So to expect her to be like, oh, this is good or this is bad, that's just not who she is. She is everything and everyone. She's all encompassing.
So awesome. Well, it's been a great conversation. Again, I highly recommend people to get Secrets of Santa Muerte. I will cherish this book. But do you have somewhere you want to send people besides the publisher or online bookstores? Do you have a website or anywhere you want people to go online?
Well, you can buy my book on Amazon. I think Barnes & Noble has it. Most bookshops have it. I do have a social media presence. I'm on Instagram, TikTok. I upload sporadically, mostly just beautiful photos of Santa Muerte altars, because
Yeah, you sent me some. God, they're gorgeous. Very jealous.
So mostly stuff like that, but occasionally I'll post useful little snippets of, what to do, say, with a broken statue or how to cleanse yourself with an egg. So there's some useful information as well thrown into that.
Great, great. Well, check it out. I'll have it on the show notes. But we are at the end. First, I'd say, Vance, thanks for keeping us company. I don't know if you don't want Santa Muerta, are you putting a statue of Santa Taxes? See if
Yeah,
you can.
little IRS altar.
Yeah, it's time of the year
We
too.
sacrifice every year.
Well, Cressida, thank you very much for coming on the show. Really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for giving us your time and sharing about Santa Muerte.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure is all ours.
And there you have it, you shining crazy diamonds. Cressida showing us where the true life is found. Death be not proud. But luck be a lady death tonight. As mentioned, and as a bonus for all subs, I'll include a past interview with Tracy Rollins based on her book, Santa Muerte, The History, Rituals, and Magic of Our Lady of the Holy Death. This bonus will focus more on the historical Santa Muerte. Consider this another important mini course. So please become a sub for this amazing gnosis, this salvation a la mode and a cup of tea. And it does help grow this Red Pill cafeteria. I can't do it without you. For all subs, let us to the bonus. For non-subs, thanks for being here in the desert of the real. For everyone and their Anubis, first, a little Sophia from Motivational Speaker, visually impaired activist and former child star Isaac Lidsky on how to overcome the mind killer that is fear.
Fear fills the void at all costs, passing off what you dread for what you know, offering up the worst in place of the ambiguous, substituting assumption for reason. Fear replaces the unknown with the awful. Now, fear is self-realizing. When you face the greatest need to look outside yourself and think critically, fear beats a retreat deep inside your mind, shrinking and distorting your view, drowning your capacity for critical thought with a flood of disruptive emotions. When you face a compelling opportunity to take action, fear lulls you into inaction, enticing you to passively watch its prophecies fulfill themselves. How do you live your life eyes wide open? It is a learned discipline. It can be taught. It can be practiced. I'll summarize very briefly. Hold yourself accountable for every moment, every thought, every detail. See beyond your fears, recognize your assumptions, harness your internal strength, silence your internal critic, correct your misconceptions about luck and about success. Accept your strengths and your weaknesses and understand the difference. Open your hearts to your bountiful blessings. Your fears, your critics, your heroes, your villains, they are your excuses, rationalizations, shortcuts, justifications, your surrender. They are fictions you perceive as reality. Choose to see through them. Choose to let them go. You are the creator of your reality. With that empowerment comes complete responsibility. I chose to step out of fear's tunnel into terrain uncharted and undefined. I chose to build there a blessed life.
Why do you think she is so popular in Mexican culture these days? I mean, she's not really a endorsed saint by the company.
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. Santa Muerte is an unofficial folk saint. Folk saints are unofficial anyway, kind of by their nature. You see, in order to become a saint in the Catholic Church,